Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call this meeting order tonight and invite those of you who are sitting in the back to come on up and join us.
A little auditorium tonight, and I think if we all gather up in front here, we can heat each other up here. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, come on up and join us. We're happy to have you come. My name is Fred Oswald. I'm the chairman of the Central Regional RAC. And I'd like to invite you, thank you for being out tonight and invite you to participate in our RAC meeting tonight. Before we go any further, I would like to recognize John Baer from the Wildlife Board, who's with us tonight. Thank you, John, for being with us.
Let me in.
You're very welcome. And also I'd like to recognize and thank all of the wildlife staff for being here and those who are going to be participating on the program. Starting on my right, I'd like to start with Michael and have you folks introduce yourself and tell the audience who you represent.
Mike Gates. I'm with the Bureau of Land Management out of Fillmore.
Chris Marble, at large.
Sarah Flinders. Oh, maybe not. Can you hear me? Sarah Flinders, U.S. Forest Service. I'm out of the Spanish Fork office.
Horse Sportsman Rep. Tim Fair, at large.
Richard Hassan, at large.
Larry Fitzgerald, agricultural.
George Holmes, agricultural.
Jay Price, elected officials.
I think most of you who are here tonight have been to a RAC meeting, but I'd like to basically go over our procedures and the way we're going to proceed tonight. There's basically three action items that we're going to be talking about, and if you didn't pick up an agenda, there are agendas just outside the back door as you came in. We're going to be talking about the Bucks and Bulls 2012 season dates and application period, the CWMU management permit numbers, and the landowner permit numbers. The way that our agenda will work is for each one of our agenda items, one of the DWR staff will give a brief presentation presenting the background information and the proposal on that action item from the division. At the end of the presentation, I'll ask the RAC members if they have any questions or clarification on anything that they've heard on that presentation. And then I will ask you as audience members if you have any questions or clarification. If you do, I'd ask you to please come up to the microphone here and let us know who you are and ask your question or your clarification. Once the question period has been closed, we will open it up for public comment, and this is the opportunity for you to come forward and let us know how you feel about the action item. If you'd like to make a comment this evening, I'd like you to fill out one of these yellow comment cards before you make a comment. You can pick them up right up here at the table in the front. Fill one of these comment cards out for us and leave it up with me so I know you want to make a comment. And then after the comments have been heard, we'll come back to the members of the RAC for discussion and any action that they want to take on those items. So that's the way we'll proceed tonight. Again, we'd love to hear from you. So if you want to comment on any of these three action items, please fill out a comment card and comment when your time comes. We'll then go ahead and continue with the agenda as it's outlined, and I'm going to ask for a motion to accept the minutes from last meeting, which you RAC members should have received in your email, and at the same time approve the agenda as presented. I do have one addition that we will talk about at the end, and that is the possibility of having a February meeting. So we'll take that up as a basically an informational item, not an action item, but an informational item at the end of our meeting. So a motion to accept the minutes and agenda.
So moved.
There's been a motion to accept it. Is there a second? And a second over here. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And that passes. So we'll go ahead and go on with the next action item, and that is a regional update from John Fairchild. John?
Thanks. I'll just go through by section the activities that have been taking place the last few months. The wildlife section, they're actually last few months and some upcoming items. Beginning mid-November, and that's pretty much right now, we're starting our postseason deer classification. I would invite the RAC members to get in touch with biologists and arrange to get out with them, find out a little bit more about how those buck-doe ratios are determined. Deer numbers coming through the check stations were down this year. That's the downside. The upside is that the deer that did come through were in pretty good condition. Preliminary findings are that a greater percentage of mature deer were taken by hunters, and we'll find out more about that as the data gets analyzed. Heber Valley Elk Working Group is going to be meeting the end of the month, November 29th. This is a group that's looking at coming up with various strategies to address the elk use that's being made in urban areas and also agricultural areas in the Heber Valley. A committee chaired by none other than Boyd Blackwell up here is going to be looking at the urban deer problem. We'll first take a shot at it internally with a committee of division participants, and then I'm sure we're going to be going outside to other stakeholders. But how to handle and manage deer in urban areas is becoming a real problem, as many of you probably know if you've run into them on your local street. Their recommendations were finalized. They will be going out to the RACs and the Wildlife Board for review at the next meeting. The habitat section, we're doing a lot to manage access on some of our wildlife management areas in Sanpete County, and that was following a quite an extensive review that involved a lot of local stakeholders. The first project is going in and ripping up old user-created roads and seeding those and closing them off, but making sure people know where they can go and trying to upgrade those roads. There'll be signs and a fair amount of habitat restoration work associated with that. Private land rehab project on the Mona Bench, that's involving knapweed control. There was a burnout by Jericho, actually towards the Gilson Mountains on BLM, and also private. We're involved in a seeding project out there. City Creek Canyon aerial seeding, maybe you saw that on the news yesterday. They're seeding over an area that was treated to control yellow star thistle. And then with UDOT, we're working with them to do some planning on big game fencing on Highway 40 from Park City to Heber, basically closing off the access areas, deer crossing areas, and replacing those with big game fencing. In the aquatic section, we established a least chub refuge population at the Deseret Chemical Depot. That's a cooperative project with them. Strawberry Reservoir fishing has been good for rainbows and cutthroats. The gillnet surveys that they recently completed turned up more rainbows than cutthroats in their nets. Jordanelle, our creel survey that we did this year showing far fewer stocked rainbows than we would expect, and we've got a project with BYU to try to tease out what's going on there that's causing those fish not to move through. We think it's not just a predation problem. might be due to an increase in Utah chub. At Deer Creek, rainbows are also doing well. There's 50,000 more were stocked in October. Utah Lake trawling has shown white bass. We do monitor fish populations in Utah Lake, and especially associated with the June sucker program. But white bass is showing up as the most abundant species in the lake. And as we increase the number of June sucker that are being transplanted into Utah Lake, we're showing that more are showing up in the carp removal program as bycatch. And these fish are endangered species, and they're released back in, and they are protected. But the fact that they're seeing a lot of them show up where they didn't before is encouraging. In our conservation outreach program, we have a hunter and shooter recruitment committee that's working on a pilot project here in the central region to try to identify ways that the various groups that are currently involved in putting together programs to encourage youth recruitment into shooting sports and also into hunting can work better together and be more effective. So that's pretty exciting. It involves a lot of gun clubs, commercial hunting areas, Boy Scouts of America, and a variety of conservation organizations and shooting organizations. So that'll be interesting to see if we can make any headway there. We are losing hunters, if the numbers in this room would be any indication. We're not recruiting hunters at the rate that they're dropping out, and hopefully a pilot program can show how it might work locally that could spread statewide. The unit-by-unit management approach that we'll hit on a little bit tonight, the outreach effort is underway to try to get people information that would answer the questions that they're going to have. And we do have on our website a list of frequently asked questions that probably has your question on there if you're concerned about how that's going to change the way you hunt. And we'll be adding, as we get other questions showing up, we'll be adding questions to it. So we're all kind of in education mode here with something that's going to be new, and hopefully we'll have a place where people can go to get a better understanding of how that's going to change the way they hunt. We do have a promotional campaign with conservation organizations to increase the awareness of deer poaching problems, and that's another activity that our conservation outreach program will be involved in. Law enforcement, we have an officer that's Brent Kaza that's headed to the southern region. He'll be in the Salina district. We have two winter range action plans that our law enforcement officers are going to be working on. One involves West Desert poaching, and the other is this enforcing the restrictions that we're putting on access in some of our wildlife management areas in San Pete County. That Black Hill would be a target area. We did have more doe poaching cases show up this deer hunt than we would have expected, and consequently our officers are working on several illegally taken deer and elk cases region-wide. If you have any questions, I'll entertain them. Answered all of them.
Well, I have just one.
Okay.
The fencing project between Park City and Heber, is that going to be completed in the near future?
No. It's just in the discussion stages right now.
Okay.
But it's on their radar. Right, Tim? Yeah.
It's in their long-range plan.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. As part of our regional update, there's going to be a Weber River cleanup project this Saturday, and Jason Lowe is here, and I've asked him to just come forward and take a few minutes to let the audience know what that's all about, and if they want to be involved, how they can get involved. So, Jason, do you want to?
Good
Thank you, sir. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jason Lowe, and I'm with the United Wildlife Cooperative. Appreciate the time just to take a moment and mention an upcoming service project that we have. It's geared towards saying thank you to the private landowners that are allowing people to have access across their property and use that river. So what we want to do is we do want to say thank you, and this is for everyone and anyone, sportsmen, anglers, anyone that would be able to come out, the more the merrier, and we can get that done quick, and we feel that it would be a great way to show our appreciation to those people that allow us to use their property to get to something that we love. So we know it's short notice for some of you that have not been informed with this. It is Saturday, November 12th, this coming Saturday. It's going to start at 8 a.m., and what we are planning on doing is meeting at the Sinclair gas station in Wanship at 8 a.m., and there we will get instructions, and we will go out and tackle some of this. For those of you that it is short notice, and if you can't make it, please be aware that the United Wildlife Cooperative is trying to do a service project every month, and we have multiple service projects. And please come join us in the future. We would love to have you help out. Yes?
Any tools, anything people should bring?
We are planning on having garbage bags. What we would recommend is bring anything that would make sense and how you would clean things up. We're planning on getting a lot of the trash and walking through those areas. So if you prefer to use tools, wonderful. Bring gloves, dress for the weather, and a special hint or not a hint. I happened to be at the Northern Rack last night, and Justin Dalling had mentioned how great the fishing is on the Weber right now for browns. So take the time, let's clean some things up, and then let's go fishing. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Somehow it got left off the agenda, and that is wildlife action at the last Wildlife Board action at the last board meeting. So let me just give the RAC members an update. As you recall, it was the fishing rule that we were talking about last time. That went to the board at their November meeting. And there were basically three motions. And let me just go through those really quickly. There was a motion to accept the division's recommendations on the private fish pond rule. And that passed unanimously. There was a second motion at the board to accept the division's proposal on the fishing contests and clinics rules, and that passed unanimously. And thirdly, there was a motion to accept the division's recommendations on the fishing guidebook and rule, and that also passed unanimously. So basically what we recommended to the board, and as well as all the other RACs, the board passed unanimously. Any questions on that? If not, we'll go ahead and get right into our action items, and we'll start out with the bucks and bulls and turn the time over to Anise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'll be presenting the bucks and bulls once in a lifetime season dates. We'll start with the deer hunting recommendations. So as John already mentioned, in 2012 will be the first year where we go to general season unit by unit hunting. There is a lot of information on this already on our website. There's some maps. So folks that have hunted in a certain place for a long time, if they need to know what unit that is, they can go online and kind of look at that and see where they need to be putting in. We've had a lot of questions about, you know, how many permits will we be having. The permits will not be set until the April RAC May meeting. We will have, for those that are putting in the drawing, probably a range of permit numbers, like a rough estimate of how many each unit will have. It won't be the recommended numbers. I'll just give them an idea you know, how many permits may be on this unit once we go to unit by unit. This first year, it's going to be tricky just because people don't know, you know, what unit to put in for, just because they don't know how many permits are going to be on, how hard is it going to be to draw. So the first year is going to be the toughest. But after that, I think people will start, you know, we'll have the data from the first year, and I think it'll get smoother as we go. Okay, so having said that, the season dates for those general season units will be similar as they have been in the past. The archery season will start August 18th and go through September 14th, a 28-day season, just as how it's always been. The muzzleloader season will be a 9-day season, September 26th through October 4th. Again, similar to what we've seen in the past. And the any weapon season, again, will be a 9-day season starting October 20th through the 28th. So as far as season dates goes, it's similar to what we've seen in the past. The only change will be is that you won't be hunting a region. You'll be hunting a unit once you draw in the drawing. Okay, moving to elk hunt recommendations. Our general season elk hunt dates, the spike bull hunt will start at the same time as the deer hunt, August 18th, and will run through the September 7th. That's a 21-day hunt. The reason that hunt is shorter than the any bull hunt is, as you may be aware, limited entry hunters also hunt the same units as spike hunters do. So this gives those limited entry hunters that have drawn that unit the last 7 days in the season to basically have on their own, which is the time of year that's closest to the rut. So it gives those guys a chance at least to have a week where they have no interference from spike hunters. The any bull season, again, those units are separate from limited entry, so we allow them to go the full 28 days. So they go from August 18th through September 14th. Any weapon elk, so that's what's commonly known as the rifle season, will be October 6th through the 18th, a 13-day season. That's the way it's always been. Muzzleloader will be a 9-day season. Starts October 31st and goes through November 8th. And then we've got the youth any bull season, which basically is right in the middle of the rut, September 15th through the 23rd, and that's a 9-day season. That's on any bull units for youth. And then there's a special hunt that we've had for the last few years up in the northeastern region. It's a late youth any bull hunt, and basically this is to take advantage of some bulls that are on private land for most of the season and only get on public land late in the season to winter. It gives youth an opportunity to be able to harvest those. It's a long season, so they're able to move around if they can't find bulls. And then actually, I'll go into this a little bit later, they've actually extended the boundary of that as well to give youth more of an opportunity, and also to allow the region to deal with some depredation issues as well with bulls. Okay, some of the changes we'll be recommending statewide. We're recommending allowing those who draw one of those youth any bull permits to be able to harvest an antlerless animal as well. There's roughly around 450 youth permits statewide, so it won't have any detrimental effect to the elk population, and it gives those youth a better opportunity of harvesting on their first elk hunt. We recommend removing the split from the bull moose hunt. If those of you that are not aware right now, the moose hunt starts and then it stops during the muzzleloader deer season, and then it starts up again. New legislation that allows once-in-a-lifetime hunters not to use hunter orange gives us the flexibility to actually just keep it going right through the muzzleloader hunt without making them wear hunter orange. So there's so few moose hunters that we're not worried it's going to be an issue for safety, and we can actually have a longer moose hunt for once-in-a-lifetime species. That's something we've been asked to do several times, and now the legislation allows us to do that. We recommend discontinuing the buck bull combo hunt. This is a hunt that's only taking place in the northern region. It was basically designed to move some of the hunting pressure off the public land units onto some of these any bull units, which tend to be in private land units, so basically just shifting. And since we're going to unit by unit, this kind of becomes unnecessary and even harder to administer, because not all of our gear units line up perfectly with our elk units. And since we're going to unit-by-unit management, we can actually control the number of permits we issue on any one unit. So it becomes kind of obsolete and really hard to administer with a unit-by-unit deer hunting. So we're recommending discontinuing that hunt. We're also recommending discontinuing over-the-counter statewide youth archery permits. If you recall, a couple years ago, we recommended this to basically add opportunity for youth. We haven't had a whole lot of youth take advantage of that. I think the most we've ever sold is about 200 statewide. We had about 1,500 set aside. And once we go to unit by unit, it makes it that much more difficult to administer those, to basically have it doesn't make it as much of a draw for youth either. They have to basically almost be able to know what unit they're hunting and then over the counter and all of that. So plus, if youth want to hunt archery, they're more than likely going to draw their permit because they get 20% right off the top. So it's really a program we did when we had statewide archery. Since we don't have statewide archery anymore, it really doesn't make sense to keep this program going. Okay, now some of the regional recommended changes. Basically, in the southern region, they're recommending a limited entry late any weapon hunt on the Ponsagant unit. As you may know, most of our units for limited entry elk have a late rifle and an early rifle season. The Ponsagant only has an early rifle season, but they're seeing more and more bull elk showing up in areas where they could be harvested in the late season. So the region is recommending adding a late season to that unit to take advantage of some of those bulls. They're also recommending a new nanny goat hunt on the beaver unit. That unit continues to be above above the number they would like on that unit. So they want to be able to harvest some nanny goats to bring that population down. And also there's a recommendation to clarify the Thousand Lakes boundary. Basically, that's to align it with neighboring units, the San Rafael and the Henry Mountains. We've always had regional boundaries, so this wasn't as big of an issue until we went to unit by unit. We realized there were some small discrepancies between the units, and this is just an attempt to fix that mistake. Okay, the southeastern region. They're recommending a change on the Henry Mountain bison hunt boundary. This change is to take advantage of some bison that have moved into an area that is currently outside the boundary. So it makes it so hunters can actually access those bison, and once they do move into that area, it also cleans up the boundary and gets the national park out of the boundary there, the Capitol Reef National Park. So it's a dual thing. It allows hunters to be able to access those bison, also makes the park boundary the actual hunt boundary, so people are not straying onto the park and trying to harvest animals. And then they're recommending changing the 9-mile Range Creek unit to an any bull elk unit. That unit's always been a problematic unit. Basically, in the past, it's been limited entry on public land, but any bull on private land. And it's just caused a lot of headaches for folks trying to navigate that unit. So the region, after having meetings with the local folks there on that unit, have come up with a recommendation to basically change that unit to entirely be an any bull unit. So it will no longer be a limited entry unit. It will just be an any bull unit. Another recommendation is to change the dates on the LaSalle-Dolores Triangle limited entry muzzleloader hunt. Basically, that's just to avoid some overlap with a rifle hunt there. A minor change. Northeastern region, there will be this year a new bison hunt on the Book Cliffs unit to deal with some tribal bison that come off the unit. So this hunt is not designed to hunt those animals that we've transplanted there recently. We still don't have large enough bulls from the transplanted stock to hunt, but there are quite a few animals that are moving off the tribe into the north western part of the unit. And this hunt is designed to deal with those bison specifically. So it doesn't go into the roadless area or any other area east of river. Anyway, basically, it's to deal with those bison that are coming off the tribe. Those bison count towards our objective, so it's within our management plan to be able to harvest them once they do come off the tribe. Is a recommendation to change the Uinta Basin extended archery boundary. So that extended archery boundary currently goes up on the foothills quite a ways, and there are probably some mountain deer that are being harvested during that hunt, and they want to basically concentrate it to deal with city or urban type deer. They also want to reduce some conflict with the Diamond Mountain Deer Unit. Because it was going up on the hill so far, it was getting close to that other deer unit. And then again, I mentioned this briefly, the change to the youth elk boundary. They've expanded the boundary to include more of that unit. A lot of it is public land, but there is some private land in there. So it expands opportunity for youth, and it also expands the ability of for the region to address some depredation issues that are caused by bull elk. Okay, northern region, they're recommending that they change the Crawford Mountain portion of the cache unit. So this is basically the part of the cache unit, if you're familiar with that area, that's east of Bear Lake. Fairly flat country, not a whole lot of good elk habitat. Elk have moved in there and kind of keyed into agricultural crops as their main way of making a living. So basically, by making this an any bull unit, we could chase those elk around and harvest them and discourage them from using that area. It's not great elk habitat, it provides opportunity for hunters without really taking away from the unit itself. They would also like to recommend a new any goat hunt on the Willard Peak unit. Basically, that's another unit where we were seeing quite an increase in goat populations, and they want to be able to reduce them. But to issue more permits on that unit, it's a fairly small unit, would have hunter crowning. So what they basically did is split their any goat hunt into two, so they could basically double the permits without doubling the crowding. So that's the reason for that additional hunt. And then they're recommending expanding the extended archery boundary in the northern region portion of the extended archery boundary to the shores of the Great Salt Lake. So basically right now I-15 is the boundary of the extended archery season in the northern region. They want to basically take it out all the way to the shore of the state, Great Salt Lake. And this will help them deal with some nuisance and depredation issues in that area.
Is that the east shore or the west shore?
That's the east shore. Yeah. You're not going to kill very many deer in the lake. Oh, yeah. I can see where you're coming from. No, it does not. Yeah, and it also doesn't include all the waterfowl management areas that are encompassed within that. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay, so that's all the changes. Some of the key dates for the big game drawing for bucks and bulls, once in a lifetime, and the new dedicated hunter applicants. Basically, that application period will be February 1st through March 1st. Application period for bonus and preference points is basically starts at the same time but is extended through March 8th. So those that just want to put in for a preference point have until March 8th to do so. And if you want to withdraw an application, you also have until March 8th to do so. And then the results will be posted on May 31st for the 2012 season. Current dedicated hunters, those that are already in the program that don't have to apply during that period, have a deadline of January 13th to choose the unit they want to hunt for the 2012 season. And there'll be letters that will go out from the dedicated hunter coordinator asking them to choose those choices. Okay, more key dates, shed antler and shed horn season dates. Basically, you have to have an online course to pick up shed antlers and shed horns if you're out there from February 1st through April 15th of 2012. Any other time of the year, you do not need a certificate. Dates when you may purchase or sell big game or its parts. Basically, antlers, heads, horns, and legally taken big game may be bought and sold February 15th through July 31st, and then untanned hides taken from big game may be bought and sold August 1st, 2012 through February 14th, 2013. And those dates are no different than any other dates. We just have to have them in place so people, they go with all the season dates that we set. So there's no change there. Okay, lifetime license questionnaire. So basically in the past, this questionnaire had gone out and asked them to select a region. Now it will go out and ask them to select a unit. They have a deadline of March 1st to return those questionnaires. If they fail to do that, they will actually have to, if they haven't any, they would have to get any leftover permits as a lifetime license holder. So they'll, hopefully most of them will get them in time. But those that don't will basically have to see what's left over after the drawing. Okay, here.
I've been asking, for each of you, for the lifetime license holders, is there a cap?
There is not.
For them in the unit?
Nope.
So they could take half the permits in the unit?
Theoretically, they could, but from all of the data that we've looked at, they spread themselves out fairly equally amongst the units. There's roughly 2,000 statewide that still hunt. There's more than that that are lifetime license holders, but there's between 2,000 and 2,500 that hunt. So, yeah, if they all went into one unit, they all called each other up and said, let's go this one, they could potentially, but we don't foresee that happening. Okay, so yeah, there's close to 4,000 lifetime license holders, but there's only about 2,500 that actually hunt annually. Disabled hunters, general season hunt extension dates. These are dates that we annually have for disabled hunters. Basically, they have to come into our office, fill out paperwork, and prove with a doctor's note that they're permanently disabled to receive those extensions. So archery deer is a preseason extension, so they can hunt August 13th through the 17th before the season opens. Muzzleloader deer, also a preseason extension from September 21st through the 25th. Any weapon deer, also a preseason extension, October 15th through the 19th. And then archery elk, also similar to the deer, is a preseason extension. And then muzzleloader, any bull elk, a postseason extension, so they hunt after the season is done, November 9th through the 14th. And any weapon elk, a preseason extension from September 15th through the 23rd. They can also hunt that area I mentioned up in the northeastern region where youth hunters hunt in that late season from December 1st through January 15th. Muzzleloader spike elk, a postseason extension from November 12th through the 16th. And any weapon spike elk, a postseason extension of October 19th through the 23rd. So these are just set dates that they can hunt if they have the special paperwork that they have to get. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Anise. Questions from the RAC directed to Anise for clarification? Chris.
Anise, I just had a question. For those dedicated hunters that don't make, the dedicated hunters that are currently enrolled, and they don't make the January 13 deadline, what are you going to do with them?
Basically, we will likely assign them a unit.
Okay.
So we're looking, kind of see where everybody's spread out, and then whatever units are under prescribed, we'll just
assign them in a unit within the region they're currently signed up for, or
may or may not be. No,
may not be. Okay. And you're gonna, I take it, notify, let people know that that's the case if they don't.
Oh yeah, they'll be receiving probably a letter and a follow-up email here shortly. Telling them exactly what needs to happen, and then, yeah, there's usually plenty of follow-up before they have to actually send their stuff in.
Okay, thank you.
Larry?
Is there a reason why they didn't put, you know, like the spike, the kids that hunt spike bulls?
Yeah, that area is a mini bull unit, so, you know, that's, those are the bulls that are causing the damage, those are the bulls that are, that, you know, are not. So they could shoot a spike, but they can also shoot any bull that, that they see.
In a spike unit, they can shoot?
No. The youth hunt is only on any bull units.
Yeah, okay.
So they can only hunt any bull units. They cannot hunt in spike units.
But there are a lot of...
But they can shoot a spike because that's any bull, obviously.
But the, there's a lot of youth that just hunt the spike bull units.
Yeah.
Would the fishing game...
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Would the fishing game entertain letting them shoot a cow or a spike?
Yeah, that becomes a little more complicated because it's not a youth hunt per se. So they're... There could be a lot of mitigating factors with law enforcement and other things with, you know...
If they're under 18 and...
Well, or even an adult shooting a cow and having the kid tag it and all that. When it's a youth hunt, we know that all that's out there are youth. It's not an issue. I trust everyone. It's not everyone is trustworthy, though.
I just think that would give the youth a better opportunity.
Yeah, and I agree with that, but that's a lot larger pool of hunters, and if you allowed that, you would kill a lot more cows, and that may be getting to the level where you may be harvesting too many cows for the population. So that's why we limited it to the youth any bull hunt. We know how many are in that. We don't know how many youth will take advantage of the spike when it may be higher than we anticipate. So,
are your elk numbers still above?
They are in some units, but they're not in others. So, this, as you know, the spike hunt is statewide, so we would have to manage it a lot more closely if we allow them to do it everywhere. There's 15,000 spike permits, so that's a whole lot more than 400. So it could have an impact on the cow elk population.
And you don't know the results of the hunts, what the... How many elk we killed yet?
This year?
Yeah.
No, we still haven't gotten the harvest data.
We'll leave that
alone. All right.
Other questions for Anise? Carl?
Looks like you're opening another season on the Willard Bay, but your recommended dates are compressed. So I'm not sure that's going to have the same effect of spreading out the hunters that you're looking for. Are you looking
to
a suggestion of longer seasons?
Certainly. The reason they wanted the dates the way they are is there's a lot of users in that area, and the success is 100%, so they could get the harvest there. It's a very accessible area. You can almost drive up to the goats in some instances. So it's not an issue of, I think in 9 days you could harvest a goat and a nice goat without any issue. Certainly, you know, there's latitude there, but the reason they compress the dates is there's so many user groups they didn't want to, you know, have goat hunters up there all the time during that when still people are accessing that area and recreating.
Other question? Thank you. Then we will turn it over to you, audience members. If you have a question on Anise's presentation or a clarification, if you'd like to come up to this microphone, we'd be happy to have him answer that. This is not your comment period time, but just questions. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the question period and open it up for your comments. If you are representing an organization, we'd like you to limit your comments to no longer than 5 minutes. If you're speaking on behalf of yourself, if you would be precise, and please take no longer than 3 minutes to let us know how you feel. Let's go ahead and first of all, I'll have Ben Louder come up. Ben?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to just express my appreciation to all of your ACT members for service that you guys are providing here tonight and for the opportunity that we have to make recommendations to you tonight. My name is Ben Lauder. I'm representing the Utah Bowman's Association. I've got two recommendations for the RAC here tonight. I sent an email to all of you yesterday. You may have seen that, and also handed out a copy of my recommendations to Fred earlier this evening. The first recommendation from the Utah Bowman's Association is actually a joint proposal, a joint recommendation from the Utah Bowman's Association, Bow Hunters of Utah, the United Wildlife Cooperative, and the Mule Deer Foundation. And this recommendation is concerning the archery deer hunt for 2012. We are asking that the RAC and the Wildlife Board reconsider making archers choose a unit and rather allow archers to continue to hunt statewide as we've done for several years in the past. The reasons for this recommendation are many. Over the past several years, the DWR biologists have stated several times that there's no biological reason to restrict the area that archery hunters are hunting in. The numbers of hunters that harvest the deer with a bow are statistically not impacting the buck-to-doe ratios. Also, back in 2009, there was a statewide archery committee that was formed to address a perceived crowding issue in the southern region. Yuba had two positions on that committee. I filled one of those positions. The results of that committee were we determined that the crowding perception was just that perception. There actually is not a crowding issue with statewide archery, and we determined that the majority of bow hunters would like the opportunity to continue to hunt statewide. Also, statewide archery is an incentive to help encourage new hunters to get into the sport of bow hunting. That benefits all hunters across the board. The reason that I say that are the more hunters that you move into archery, bow hunters have less of an impact on the resource with their lower success rate, and it could provide an opportunity to keep opportunity there without having to further cut permits as we've been doing over the last year and are planning to continue to do so this coming year. Also, the other thing that we'll do with the unit-by-unit hunting is part of that proposal last year was designed to increase the buck-to-doe ratio. The more hunters you put into bow hunting, you can, again, continue to increase that opportunity while at least not reduce that opportunity while actually increasing the buck-to-doe ratio. We've seen an example of that right here in this region on the Wasatch Front, the archery-only portion of the Wasatch Front. Last year, despite the decision to go to unit by unit, four of the five RACs voted to, even despite the unit by unit, to continue hunting statewide archery. So we felt like it was important to bring it back up here again. And then finally, the youth statewide archery hunt that the division is currently recommending to do away with, if we were to continue hunting statewide archery, that would allow that youth hunt to continue. I realize that only 200 youth have, you know, took advantage of that last year. That's 200 youth that got to hunt deer that otherwise would not have been able to, and we all know that recruitment is one of our biggest struggles right now in the sport of hunting. So that wraps up my first recommendation. My second recommendation is not a joint proposal. It's just coming from the Utah Bowman's Association, and that is dealing with the season dates on the Rocky Mountain goat hunt on the Ogden Willard Peak unit. With the proposal for that new hunt, Carl brought this up in the question period. A 9-day hunt just seems really short for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We manage these tags for 100% success rate, and I don't really see a reason why we shouldn't allow hunters a longer hunt, longer period of time to hunt, to help spread themselves out over the season, and also to give them that opportunity to really have that once-in-a-lifetime experience they're looking for. I brought this up last night at the Northern Region, and prior to the meeting, I talked to Darren DeBlois, the biologist for the region, for the unit. He's the one that made the recommendations, and he had two concerns. One, law enforcement wanted a Monday opener rather than a Saturday opener, and I don't have any problem with that. And the other reason was he didn't realize that once-in-a-lifetime hunters didn't have to wear orange. And so the other thing he was trying to do was start the hunts after the archery hunts were over to avoid requiring bow hunters to wear orange. And since that rule change in, was it in 2009? Yeah, since that rule changed in 2009, that's no longer an issue. So I worked with him quickly and came up with a proposal to extend those seasons out a little bit, give a little bit more hunter day opportunity there. And these are on the sheet that I handed out to you. Those season dates would be for the early hunt, September 10th to September 23rd. That is a Monday opener with a Sunday close. It expands that hunt out to a 14-day hunt. The late hunt would be September 24th to October 14th. That would be a 21-day hunt, again a Monday opener and a Sunday close. And then on the female goat only hunt, opening that on October 1st and ending that on October 14th. So that would overlap the last 14 days of that late billy hunt, and again that would be a Monday opener and a Sunday close. The Northern Region adopted this recommendation into their recommendation last night, and Darren, the biologist, didn't have any issues, biological or otherwise, with these proposed dates. So I would encourage you to take a hard look at this and recommend that as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. Jeremy Hansen.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Hansen. I'm from Sandy, Utah. I'm here representing myself today. I would also like to support the co-sponsored proposal by UBA, BOU, UWC, and MDF to continue with statewide archery for the same given reasons. I'd also like to go along with the recommendation of agree with the any bull unit for the nine mile area. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Jason Lowe.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jason Lowe, and I'm representing the United Wildlife Cooperative tonight. The UWC would also like to support the DWR's recommendation to the change to the 9 mile range creek unit to an any bull elk unit. And we also would love to support the joint proposal presented by the Mule Deer Foundation, the Utah Bowmen's Association, Bow Hunters of Utah, in regards to the statewide archery. And finally, in the coming months, we would also like the RAC and the division to consider ways to implement comprehensive hunter management in the newly created mule deer subunits. Creating these subunits allow us to manage hunters and deer on a unit basis, yet we have chosen to manage every general season unit for 18 to 25 bucks per 100 does. Between this year and next, we will have removed 13,000 hunters as well as all of the associated revenue. And as you know, these cuts do not address our deer. Rather, they address the social aspect of deer hunting. Past division surveys have always showed that the most important thing to the majority of hunters is having the opportunity to be in the field with a tag. We also acknowledge that there is a segment of the population that desires a bigger antlered deer, and what we would like is to see thoughts and some strong consideration towards what the wildlife has now, Wildlife Board has now chosen to manage things as a 30 unit situation. Do we now have the opportunity to manage these general deer season, the general deer season with units allowing for opportunity and units managed for possibly larger antlered bucks? So at this time, the UWC urges the division to come up with a comprehensive plan in the coming months to manage our general season and units to reflect these stats in the 2012 management plan. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jason. Michael Christensen.
Michael Christensen, I'm going to go a little bit different direction with my comments. So I want to address really quick the lifetime license holder issue. Lifetime license holders, Greg Sheehan said that 12% of permits went to lifetime license holders in one unit, and that was the highest proportion of lifetime license holders that took tags in one unit. Now that we're going to the 30-unit system, not one of us knows what kind of permit situation we're going to have since they'll be set in the spring. It could be that on some units that have smaller deer herds that are going to be managed for higher buck-to-doe ratios, that those units could see a high influx of lifetime license holders who come in and take those permits. So I'd encourage the RAC to look at a 15 or 20% cap per unit for lifetime license holders, so they couldn't take more than that portion of the general season permits. Now, what that would do is that would allow them to choose a second choice or a third choice, so they would be guaranteed their tag. We wouldn't be taking their tags away. We might be displacing some of them. There is one unit, you know, we're making the Thousand Lakes a limited entry unit. We're taking that from limited entry, making it a general season unit. And I think we're crazy if we think that there's going to be thousands of tags on that unit. So that's one thing I'd like to see. The other thing I'd like to see is if we look really quickly in the hunt season structure, for the general season, we've got archery, any weapon, and muzzleloader hunts for deer. Now, if we look at for elk, since even though it is limited entry, we've got archery, any weapon, muzzleloader, and premium hunts. It just seems to me that it would be so simple to make a dedicated hunter part of it, and then that would exclude dedicated hunters from having their separate point pool, from having their separate drawing. They're going to be allotted a certain number of tags anyway, just like the muzzleloader hunters and the rifle hunters and the archery hunters will be. And it's going to make it a lot more simple. We're making things more complex. We're going to have dedicated hunter points and deer points and limited entry deer points. It would just take one tier out of it, one application process out of it. So all they'd have to do is list, after the muzzleloader hunts, they could list dedicated hunter hunts, just like they've done with the elk tags for the premium hunts. And those are my two comments. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Gary Comer. Gary, I just want to make sure. I think you're going to be talking about the action item that we're talking about.
I'm not sure what I need to be talking. I just wanted to bring up those things. I don't know what you're. I've never been enough to these meetings.
Yeah. Usually, what we do is we try and keep on task, and we're really talking about Anissa's presentation tonight in terms of the recommendations from the Wildlife Division on the Bucks and Bulls recommendations.
How about the way they're taken? Is that not on there?
No.
The way the animals are taken.
We really appreciate anybody coming out to these RAC meetings.
I talked to John.
And I do want you to let us know what you have in mind. So go ahead.
Okay. About 2 weeks ago, I went across the road into the extended archery hunt area, and this guy was He said, you aren't going up that hill right there. He said, I want you to stay out of here. Okay? He says, I just shot a 6x7 bow over there with my bow. And he says, I made a 115-yard shot, and he's beating on his chest. How many foot-pounds are left on a bow at 115 yards? My complaint is, and they've got some of the best archery hunters here in this room, and I'd hate to offend any of them. I really do. But you're telling me there's no deer? Well, you want to know where half of them are gone? Sorry, guys. They're wounded with a bow on the archery hunt. My kids and myself wounded 5 deer, and I'm putting it right in my face because I'm a bow hunter. 5 deer on the bow hunt. I wounded 1, my kid wounded 3, my other kid wounded 1. This happens. You know what the problem is the rangefinder. I'm sorry, guys, but the rangefinder, this is a primitive weapon. What's next? Heat-seeking arrows? I mean, this rangefinder, you hook it up with this sight, you hook it up with that sight. I've talked to many guys that have shot over 100 yards who are going to wait till the first confirmed 200-yard kill is on. I hate to bring it up, but I have a lot of guys that love archery, but this, sooner or later, you guys are going to have to address the rangefinder. Because this wounding is too much. We wounded 5. And I'm telling you right now, we wounded 5 deer. And you cannot have these guys going out with these bows shooting 115 yards. And I've talked to many of them. I know of 2 other guys, 1 wounded 2 and another guy wounded 1. And one's on the book cliffs. And it's, you know, these bows don't have enough foot-pound pressure. You know, after 100 yards with a carbon arrow, ain't going to go through an elk. I think it hardly goes through one at 30 yards. Anyway, there's something you'll have to address sooner or later because it's getting out of hand. And one other thing, since you're going to lose so many tags, like 13,000 I heard, be with the deer, you know, the deer breaking up. And the units are great. It's the best idea on the face of the earth. We went to Colorado for 4 years in a row, took a 30-inch buck each year, and there's 750 units over there if you want to talk about units. But since they're going to be losing a little bit of opportunity with these other guys, take away the 2 elk thing, the cow and the bull. Just a thought. Give each, you know, 1 elk each. I've got friends that want to draw cow permits that can't draw cow permits because some other guy like my brother who's, you know, his group killed 5 bulls and they need, or no, 5 elk with the cows. Nobody needs that many elk. Sorry. If I'm out of line, I'm sorry. But thanks for listening to me.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it. Steve Perry. Steve was a former RAC member, years of service on the RAC, and we just appreciate you showing up as an audience member. Thanks for being here.
And it's an honor to be here. It's a privilege to be able to have you guys here to hear a proposal that I have. I'm getting older, and I realize that my opportunities are not quite as good as they used to be. And I'm making this proposal that 62 years old and older can put in for all the hunts. It'd be much like the non-residents. I've handed out a paper that all of you should have, plus I've emailed all of you. I just think it'd be years ago I did a lot for the youth to get hunting, and now I guess I'm looking to take care of us seniors. The non-residents have this opportunity that they can put in for all the different hunts. We can only take one, like it should be. I also would, I'd kind of like to see the opportunity of, we still have waiting periods that we could maybe purchase points so that the time frame might be a little better. The odds are still pretty slim to draw. I did have one person ask me about a set-aside for the seniors, and I said, well, we've got 50% of the hunts going to full maximum bonus point people. We've got some of the youth getting some of the percentage. We've got a lot of conservation permits that come out that are set aside. I said, I think if the seniors would be just happy to be able to put in for a lot of the different animals. If a person had never taken an animal, and for some reason they'd actually have 8 opportunities, and of course they could only take one at a time, or, you know, any one year. But I guess that'd be the thing I'm asking. See if we could send her doing that. It'd be much like the non-residents that can do now. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you being here tonight. Randy Quayle.
Good evening. I'm just going to respond to the gentleman's argument a little while ago about wounded game with archery. There was a study done up on the Wasatch Range a few years back, done by the Fish and Game with collared elk. Out of the ones they collared, there was a 5% mortality rate of unretrieved game that the collars quit transponding on. Not one of those was taken with an arrow. They were all taken with a rifle. I'm not saying that we don't hit them, but in order for it to be mortality, they have to die after they've been hit, which is true with all of them. But the mortality rate is just not that high with archery, even though some are wounded. I do agree with him on long shots. That's something that, you know, I don't. Different hunters do different ways, you know, the bow hunter's going to have to go a long ways to catch up with everybody else for wounded animals. So I just thought I'd bring that up. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. That's all of the comment cards I have.
That's a true statement.
Just like to say howdy and thank everybody for their time and effort. My name's Ty Bolter.
Go ahead, Ty.
I just want to say I've had an archery tag probably for the last 9 years, and in the last 5 years I haven't shot at a deer or ever shot a 100-yard shot, so we're probably even keel now for the guy that was up here before.
Thanks, Ty. Any other comments on this action item, audience members? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close the comment period time and bring it back to the rack for your discussion and recommendations. I think rather than just throw it open, guys, I'd like to go ahead and, based on what we've heard from the audience tonight, take it point by point. So if it's okay with everybody, let's go ahead and take up the archery proposals. And Anise, if you'd like to come up and basically let us know what the division's stand is, what was the rationale to basically taking the archery away from statewide.
Sure. Basically, the rationale is based on because we were going to unit by unit, you know, initially we had no problem with staying with statewide archery even after going to unit by unit, but there was a fairness issue brought up that everybody gets to hunt on a unit-by-unit basis, and archers get to hunt statewide. There may be, you know, some units that might end up being managed differently. If you have higher buck-to-doe ratios on some unit, you may see an influx of archers going to those units, those type of things. So that's the main thrust behind it. I think the division could manage unit-by-unit, statewide archery, if that's the way it went. I don't think it's doable, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And either way, we would be able to manage it. But the rationale behind it was mostly a fairness issue.
So it was a fairness issue in terms of it going by unit, everybody has to sort of be on a level playing field.
Exactly.
It wasn't scientific, and it is something that, depending on what the board besides, you guys can go either way.
Yeah, biologically, we can do the surveys and figure out how many are getting taken by each weapon type, and then we could adjust. So that's doable. I mean, it would take a little bit more work, but it's nothing. We're doing it now, so we can do it.
Thank you. Rack members, up to you in terms of anybody like to talk about the archery proposal. Go ahead, Richard.
I know this seems to always be a kind of a sticking point with, you know, archery and stuff, and I archery hunt. And every year it seems like there's always a push for more days, you know, and I understand that. And I know a lot of times the argument is, well, and even the biologists will say, well, they don't impact the herds that much. They don't impact it in a way, you know, the buck-bill ratios as much. It's kind of negligible. But I disagree with that. You could say that about predators. I've heard the same thing said about predators for cougars. They say it doesn't really impact the buck-bill ratio. It doesn't impact the numbers. But added together, every one of them make a difference. Bears make a difference. They may not take very many, but they take a slice of the pie. When you take a slice of the pie, every one of them takes their slice, and what's left is what's left for us. Okay? So, and I really understand this fairness issue, and I don't have anything against the archers. I don't think they impacted as much as rifle hunters, for sure. No question about that. But my feeling is that if we're going to restrict rifle hunters and muzzleloader hunters, everybody needs to feel the pain. And that's kind of how I feel about it at this point.
Thanks, Richard. Others? Chris?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify Anise, the division stance on this. As far as rifle and muzzleloader hunters, the idea behind going to unit by unit management was to be able to manage each unit and control harvest. If archery was statewide, do we gain or lose anything as far from an archery perspective? Because I know we get gains. The idea is to get gains by doing it rifle, but do we get that with archery?
I guess I'm not sure what you mean by gain anything as far as gain permits, gain hunters.
Excuse me. What I'm asking is, if we went to statewide archery, are we losing any gains that we're going to get from the rifle and muzzleloader going unit to unit?
No, because, I mean, it's going to roughly be the same number, whether they're hunting statewide or whether they're hunting on unit by unit. So, you know, distribution may be a little bit different, so you may have to have, you know, different permits for rifles and muzzleloaders on the units. That archers may be hunting more. So, yeah, I mean, it will be different, for sure. Gain or loss, I don't think there's... It really doesn't affect a whole lot. And I do want to speak to what Richard said. No biologist is going to tell you that archers have no effect. They're harvesting about half at the half of the rate of the rifle hunters are. So they're harvesting. They're not out there just to go camping. So they are harvesting animals. And every animal harvested by an archer is an animal that can't be harvested by anyone else. So they do have less of an effect, obviously. So you can put twice as many hunters and harvest the same number of deer. But they do have an effect. So, yeah, if you have them statewide, you may have to limit rifle and muzzleloader hunters on specific units that archers may be targeting more. So there will be some imbalance, no doubt about it. Eventually, it all evens out just because nobody wants to hunt in a crowded unit. So, but, you know, it may be an issue for initially.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Carl.
Other states are seeing archery as an opportunity, as a weapon of choice to provide opportunity for sportsmen. Mm-hmm. Arizona, unlimited archery. You have to draw everything else. Idaho, you can hunt all of the limited entry elk units with your bow. Wouldn't this be the same? Wouldn't this provide, if we went statewide archery, wouldn't it provide a way to keep the opportunity for the sportsmen? Everybody's arguing fairness. I guess I don't have a bone to pick with anybody.
Sure.
It's sportsmen across the board. Let's provide the opportunity. Let's draw people out of the rifle hunt. That will help the rifle hunters draw the tags. Sure. We'll provide the opportunity. We'll kill less. Other states are seeing it as a way to
to provide opportunity, and I think this would be a good choice for us.
Yeah, I think you're right about other states using archery. There is no unlimited archery on mule deer in Arizona. On elk, there is, and we have unlimited archery here.
I buy an unlimited archery tag in Arizona every year, and I hunt
mule deer,
and I hunt about 80% mule deer. Yes.
Really? Yeah. You know, that floors me because the success rate is fairly high. If you have an unlimited number of archers, you're going to have.
They do have their units that you
right.
have to draw.
Certainly.
But it's about 75% of the state is an unlimited archery.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we could do that on certain units. But again, it'd be, you know, kind of what we have currently with our unlimited elk hunting. So, again, it's whatever the public wants. It's how do you split the pie? And I'm not going to sit here and tell you how to split the pie. All I can tell you is how we can do it, how it would affect how we would manage.
So just to restate, I really think that archery is a way to maintain the opportunity for our sportsmen. I was hunting in the early 80s when we had two deer, and I watched people flow into archery.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll see the same thing. I think that in the end, the rifle hunters and the muzzle loader hunters will be glad
right.
to have those folks out of the draw for those tags, because if we reduce the tags, it's going to be harder to draw. The outflow of hunters into archery will help them that way. We still maintain the opportunity, and I think it's a good idea to match up with some of what the other state is using archery
yeah.
to provide opportunity.
And just to clarify, if we do have statewide archery, it doesn't mean there'll be more archers, because you can only have so many numbers. It actually may be more archers if we go to unit by unit than if we allow statewide archery. So as far as opportunity goes, we actually may be able to have more opportunity if we manage it unit by unit than if we let archers go statewide. So, you know.
I guess the second part of that is when you decide how to allocate the reduction in tags.
Mm-hmm.
You could balance that out.
And that's exactly what we'll be doing.
And encourage
yeah.
folks to go there and help that out and maintain that.
Yeah.
And at least from my perspective, it should be balanced out on the number of animals harvested out of the total. So
sure.
if rifle takes 69-70% of it, they should lose those tags and move those into archers so that you have a draw to pull them out of the rifle into the archery.
Yeah.
Sarah?
Can you clarify for me, in the past where we've had statewide archery and then our five units across the state, was there an unfairness issue then? Because us rifle hunters or muzzleloader hunters were still in our unit
mm-hmm.
where the archers had statewide. Was there a fairness issue before now? Wouldn't there be?
It depends who you ask, I guess, is the answer. If you ask folks from the southern region, yeah, there was.
Yeah.
If you ask people from the southeastern region, yeah, there was. If you ask people from the northern, northeastern, and central region, no, there wasn't. So, and then when you get to even a smaller level, you're going to have more and more people, if they see more archers coming into those units, thinking it's an unfairness issue. So you amplify the problem when there you have 30 units versus five regions. So it's more complicated than was it fair then and what would be fair then now. You're amplifying the people that will complain by you know, sixfold.
Okay, but if we do all go archery, muzzleloader, rifle in the smaller units,
mm-hmm.
won't those archers in those units impact the rifle and muzzleloaders at a higher extent?
No, they'll be...
Just because they're going to be taking those animals first.
No, and it doesn't matter who takes them first. It just depends how many archers go into a unit. So if it's statewide, there could be more archers, more than the percentage that would be there if you had a draw system. Then, you know, say we went with a 60-20-20 split. So 20% of the permits go to archers. If you had it statewide, there could be more than 20% going into any specific unit. So you would have to cut the muzzleloader and rifle permits to to overcome that. And that's what I'm saying, because you don't know where they're going. You would have to at least have a year go by, and then when you figure out how many archers hunted this unit, you would have to cut rifle and muzzleloader permits to compensate for that. So it becomes a little bit more problematic how you set permits, and there will be an equity issue. You will be you will be cutting permits for rifle hunters if you have more archers in one unit than you anticipated. So, yeah, I mean, there is an inequity issue. If it's not because they're there first, that makes, you know, there's enough ducks to go around. You know, and success is higher on the rifle and muzzleloader hunt, even though the archers are there first. So it's not a who's there first type of thing. It's just numbers of bucks on the landscape and number of hunters on the landscape.
And either way, there's going to be an equality issue, whether you go statewide or by unit.
No, I think by unit you could allocate them by percentages, and you know the number that are going to be there every year. So it won't be an equity issue, because in the way we set our splits are not just by the number of bucks harvested, but we also know how many archers there are, how many rifle hunters there are. There are more people that hunt with a rifle, so you have to have more rifle permits, otherwise they'll be just sitting out. So it's not just, you know, biological. You have to look at the social aspect as well. So, and that's why we do our splits the way we do them, is we know roughly how many people want to hunt archery, how many people want to hunt muzzleloader, and how many people want to hunt rifle. And that's how we try to make our splits, so it's both fair socially and biologically.
Okay.
Tim, it seems to me that what we did is we went to a unit-by-unit basis in order to do a better job of wildlife management. It seems to me we ought to stick with that. It's see if we can make it work and see where we are. I right now don't see an overwhelming reason that we ought to step away from where we were before. It might be good for archers. I'm not sure it's good for the intent we had in going to unit by unit.
Anybody else want to make a comment on this issue? If not, I will just see if anybody is interested in making any kind of a motion on this particular issue. Chris?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to ask the Wildlife Board to reconsider statewide archery.
Okay, is there a second to that?
I'll second it.
Okay, there's a motion and second by Tim.
No, that's Carl.
I'm sorry, motion by Chris, second by Carl. And the motion is to ask the Wildlife Board to reconsider making archery in 2012 statewide rather than unit by unit system. And I'm assuming that your motion includes both regular archers and youth.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Further discussion?
Does that motion also include to approve the others?
No, it just has to do with the archery first proposal. Further discussion? Richard?
Denise, if they change it to statewide, what is that going to do for your ability to, how many tags per unit are you going to be able to do? I mean, how many people are you going to go have in there now? Is that?
Yeah, so the way it's going to work, the first couple of years are going to be educated guesses, but once we get good data on each unit, we can be fairly precise on how many permits we can put out there. I mean, we do it currently. Even though we don't hunt unit by unit, we gather data unit by unit currently. So we have that information. We know where archers are hunting. But when you go to unit by unit, you may have a different dynamic, just because the southern region now gets a lot of archers, but the southern region has a lot of deer and a lot of bucks, so it's not impacted. If it ends up being like the Wasatch or the Central Mountains that's getting the influx, we may have to cut, you know, differently. So it's going to be a different dynamic. It's doable, but it'll be different.
Larry?
To sum all this up, some units will take a greater hit by the archer hunters than other units.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's going to happen no matter what. And we've all heard, like, when you're out hunting, this unit had a lot of bucks this year. And if you're regional hunting, you can go to that unit and hunt it. But if you're statewide archery, you can still do that, but the others can't. So.
And it will also take away from the muzzleloader hunters and the rifle hunters on some units.
Yeah, it may do that. And it would be hard to say right now, but the potential is there.
And it will make it harder to manage.
Not harder to manage, but...
On the onset it will be,
yes, correct. Because we just don't know. Again, it's a new system. Until we get a few years of data, you really don't know how things are impacted.
Okay, I'm going to call for the question, unless there's somebody else needs to make a comment. Okay, you've all heard the motion and second. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The vote is 5-4 against the motion, and it fails. So let's go to the next item, and that's the second recommendation from the archers having to do with the Ogden-Willard Peak Rocky Mountain goat season dates. Anybody like to discuss that proposal or make or offer a motion? Carl?
I was fortunate enough to accompany a friend on this unit this year. There was significant overcrowding the first couple days. It was a difficult place to be. Lots and lots of shooting, lots and lots of crowding. But after the first 2 days, the hunters had enough time to expand out and did self-regulating, and it was not bad. I actually think two 9-day seasons will compress them. They will not be able to expand it. And I recommend that we accept the dates given by the bow hunters. It adds 4 more or 5 more days to it. It gives the Monday opening that the law enforcement wants. It'll allow it's the best of both worlds. You have 2 seasons to cut the hunters in half and time for them to spread out themselves. I recommend we accept that.
Okay, clarification. On this proposal, the September 10, 24, and October 1st, are those Mondays?
The first one is.
First one is.
Right, the October 10th, is that one?
It's September 10th.
September 10th.
Well, if 10th is Monday, the 24th is a Monday.
Is it a Monday? Yeah, so they're both Mondays. Yeah.
Okay, so those are Monday dates under the proposal.
Right.
Okay, is there a second to Carl's motion? Second by Chris. Richard.
Yeah, I noticed that this will overlap the muzzleloader deer. Is that an issue with hunters up there?
We didn't see enough deer for anybody to be up there. We never saw another hunter. But, I mean, the dates would. There might be somebody up there, but I can't believe there'd be very many.
I just wondered if there's muzzleloader deer hunters up there, if that just creates more crowding. So just wondered.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, you've heard the motion on the second.
One question. Yes. So it's 3 days to each one of those.
3 days to each.
Five.
Five days to each hunt.
It's the unit number.
And it's 5 days to each hunt.
Extends the season on each hunt 5 days. Anish, do you want to address?
There's really nothing to address. Like Ben mentioned, Darren's okay with the change. It's basically, you know, a non-issue if you guys want to vote that way. It actually was a question I asked Darren initially when he set the recommendations, because they were different than the beaver, which is they have all the similar issues. And his main concern was what I mentioned earlier, all the other users in that area. But, you know, as we all know, everybody's got a share, so it's not an issue for us.
Okay, I'll go ahead and call for the question. Those in favor of the motion? Opposed? That's... How many are we tonight?
It's an order. I don't know why you're weighing in.
Yeah, it is a lifetime, once-in-a-lifetime hunt that everybody puts into. So, I mean, it does affect everybody.
Motion passes 8-1. Did you vote for it?
Sure.
Okay. Motion passes 8-1. Are there any of the other presentations that RAC members feel strongly about that they'd either like to discuss or make any motions on? Chris?
I did have one question. The on the lifetime license holders, has the division thought about that just in case it does become an issue?
That's the cap?
Yeah, sure. We certainly have thought about it, yeah. So the way we've expected to deal with it is we really don't know until the first year. The data we have now tells us they equally distribute themselves to all the units. If we find it is an issue, it certainly can be fixed the following year, and we would set a cap somehow to deal with it. We don't want to fix a problem that doesn't exist. Lifetime license holders are few and have been in the system for a long time, so we felt if they have to draw, it doesn't become as valuable as a permit. And in any case, if it becomes an issue, we certainly can deal with it in the future. The current data we have doesn't show that that'll be the case. We may be proven wrong, and if we want to address it ahead of time, that's another issue altogether.
And the division doesn't have any kind of obligation to give them a desired unit, only guarantee them a tag?
Well, it's a tough thing. I mean, because when they got those permits, there were no units. So we have an obligation to provide them an opportunity to hunt, yes.
But not a unit, not a specific area.
I mean, it depends how much they want to push it, I guess. It's one of those things that is currently evolving because we change management, but they have a lifetime license hold permit that they purchased under different conditions. So.
Okay, but you do have a contingency plan if it doesn't.
Yeah, we certainly do. I mean, we've thought about this. It's not something we're just saying, oh, let's. If it does impact any specific unit and we see that's an issue, we could certainly put a cap on how many can go in each unit.
Okay, thank you.
Richard.
I think it's really going to seriously have to look at that because lifetime license holders, the one that hunt, they're not stupid. They're going to go where they know there's bucks. That's all there is to it. Plus, you add on 15% of those, up to 15% of those tags, we're going to go to dedicated hunters also. You start really squeezing that, so lifetime license holders really impacts particular units.
Theoretically, though, if you're managing all units equally, there should be no more bucks anywhere than anywhere else.
Yeah, but you know that's not going to happen. It's just you can't. There's so many things you can't control.
There's certainly things we can't control, but we can manage how many bucks get harvested.
I mean, if I have it as a lifetime license holder, and I knew there were good bucks in a particular unit, that's what I'm choosing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it is. So, anyway, I think we ought to consider that eventually.
Carl?
Anise, I'm actually hoping that you have to address the lifetime license holders in the future because that means the deer have come back and that there are great areas in these general areas. But at least right now, I agree with you. Just leave it alone. If we have to face it in the future, then I think we're in a better place.
Yeah, and it's an easy fix. It's not anything that has to be, we just set a cap and go from there.
RAC members, you heard some other recommendations from the audience tonight. Feel free to discuss those or offer a motion. If not, I would entertain a motion that we accept the Bucks and Bulls season dates and application timeline.
I move we accept the recommendations other than the one we changed on the goat.
We made that recommendation.
Yeah. Accept the rest.
Okay. And a second motion from Jay, second from Richard. Further discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? And that passes unanimously. And thank you, audience members, for your willingness to come out tonight and talk about this important issue. We'll move on to the next action item, and that's Boyd Blackwell talking about the CWMU management plan and permit numbers. Boyd?
I'm here tonight to address our CWMU permit numbers and also our Landowner Association permit numbers for 2012. First of all, I'll go through a summary of our applications that we received this year. There were 87 CWMUs that were required. If you'll remember, we're on a three-year rotation where the COR is good for 3 years, and then they have to reapply every 3 years. So we had 87 CWMUs that required a renewal for this year. We had 83 that actually made that request. Four CWMUs have dropped out of the program. The division is recommending one application be denied. And I'll go over some of those as I go through the regional issues. And then we have one split recommendation. All of the other recommendations the division agrees with. We'll have 10 CWMUs that will require renewal for 2013, 15 for 2014. And we have 9 new CWMUs for this year that have requested CORs. This, if approved, will give us a total of 116 CWMUs for the 2012 hunting season. And there's the breakdown by region, 70 in the northern, 5 northeastern, 12 central, 16 southeastern, and 13 in the southern region. Covers 2 million acres, and there are 444 landowners that are participating in the CWMU program. We have 104 CWMUs that have requested buck deer permits, 61 bull elk, 30 bull moose, and 13 pronghorn, and 3 CWMUs requested turkey permits. We found that since we've gone to over-the-counter on turkeys, that a lot of CWMUs are no longer requesting turkey permits because they're basically over-the-counter. On the permits, there'd be a total of 2,940 private, 488 public permits. On the regional issues, the first 5 in the northern region are new CWMUs, Thatcher Mountain, Park Valley, Curlew Valley, and Bluebell, and Middle Ridge are new CWMUs. Junction Valley is a change. They've changed their boundary and have added some acreage. In the northeast region, we have 2 new CWMUs, the Vinequin Canyon CWMU and Buckhorn Ranch CWMU. And then in the central region, we have the Skull Valley North. We're recommending a denial of this request. They do not have enough acreage to qualify. At 3,749 for a deer CWMU, they need to have 5,000. We asked them for plat maps and to verify, and this is the acreage that came out. So we are recommending denial of this CWMU. Also, there was a fire in that area, and the biologist has some concerns about the hunt quality and opportunity on that CWMU. In the southeastern region, we have 1 new CWMU. The Mini Mod and the Spring Creek Dodge are changing their boundaries. And they actually, on the Mini Mod, they've done a verification on their boundary. There was some concern that it was going on and off of a neighboring property, and that was verified. And so we have a new boundary on that one. In the southern region, we have 1 new CWMU, the New Harmony CWMU for deer and turkey. The Johnson Mountain Ranch has requested a reduction in their deer permits from 27 and 3 to 9 and 1. On the Alton CWMU, Their request for management buck permits, they are asking for an increase to 5-1 for six. They qualify for 3-1 for four. Their qualifications is determined by the size of the CWMU and the overall unit and the overall permits that are available to the public at that time. So we're requesting a denial of that change and that they are provided a 3-1 split. And that's everything on the CWMU permits. Oh, there you are.
Thank you, Boyd. Questions from the RAC for Boyd? Seeing none, we'll see if there are any audience members who have a question or a clarification on Boyd's presentation. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close the question period, and I just have one comment card from Ken Clegg. Ken's the president, I believe, of the CWMU Association. Is that right, Ken?
Executive director, yes. I'm actually not speaking in their behalf on this one today. It's just on that one denial that's in a central region, and so this is the appropriate RAC.
Great. Thanks for being here, Ken.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. I've actually got some handouts. I don't need to give them to you, but if anybody is wondering about how the map is shaped and so forth, please ask, and I'll give those to you. The CWMU called the Skull Valley South and the Skull Valley North, there's two separate CWMUs. Just to give you a little bit of background, it's a winter range and farming area primarily. It's got about 50,000 private acres over there in Skull Valley, and about 36,000 of those acres are in CWMUs. They fit the qualification. It's primarily two blocks, you know, one north and one south. It was initially applied as a CWMU, as a single CWMU. And the division said, well, yeah, but it's not contiguous here, and they're right. There's 300 acres. It's not contiguous. It was denied based on that. The acres that we have, you know, according to what we're paying taxes on, is not the 3,700 that Boyd pointed out, but it is actually under the five. When we initially made our application, it was over. It was 5,100. We realized we'd actually applied for a neighbor, and he wasn't in the CWMU. It was posted correctly, and everything was correct, and it's operated as a CWMU. But we were in error. The division was right. Tom's done an excellent job, and Craig Clyde were correct in helping us figure that out. What we've determined is we think that the better way to solve that is to go back to the initial thing and have a single CWMU instead of splitting it into two. Feel like that's a lot more fair for the public hunter. It is a marginally small CWMU on the north, and there's no agriculture associated with it. And so if the public hunter were to draw that permit, and a catastrophic fire happens, which it does about every year out in Skull Valley, then it could be that there's not any cheatgrass there, there's not any deer on the unit, and it's probably not a fair hunt for the public. So what we're suggesting is to use an existing rule, not changing anything, to use the trade land policy. We're asking for 300 acres of BLM, greasewood, sagebrush flat. It's not real high quality wildlife habitat, but we're simply asking for that 300 acres of public ground to be included into the CWMU so that it's a clearly identifiable boundary. It connects the two properties. What we'd trade in exchange for that are three non-contiguous things that are not in the CWMU right now. They'd be considered public hunting, open to public, and we would still honor the public hunt that takes place on the north unit. So we'd have an 80-20 split. We'd have eight private tags, two public tags, and all of the hunters within that can hunt the entire 36,000 acres instead of being relegated to one side or the other. That's in essence what we're trying to accomplish there. Implications, if we don't do it that way, then the north unit would simply be denied. We'd still have the south unit. There'd be one public hunter instead of two. That one public hunter would hunt on the south side, and the north side would just have to hunt it with regular unit tags instead of the CWMU tags, which isn't the end of the world. It's not a big deal to us. We do think that the single CWMU would improve hunting for public and private hunters, since they're not relegated to one side or the other, and it would improve the flexibility in case and in anticipation of the next fire that occurs out there. That's all I have.
Can I? Might you stay up here for a minute? I'd like to have Boyd speak to basically your request, but it seems to me there are two issues, and Boyd can speak to them. One is a deadline issue, that you basically missed the deadline for doing that, and that what you're asking is that that deadline be waived for you guys in terms of offering a new proposal. The second thing is, and Boyd, if you could speak to this, I'm not sure that we've ever had a proposal that allows contiguous, two pieces to be contiguous with a piece of public land. So could you address that?
Yeah, there are three reasons that you can use it, any public land in a CWMU. One is to make a definable boundary if it's needed. The other one, if it's totally surrounded by private land. And the other one is if it's to meet the needs of a management plan that the division has to manage wildlife.
So this meets the first criteria?
No.
No.
And I'll tell you why. You're including a piece of public land in order to make a CWMU. And so that land isn't an integral part of a CWMU. And as much as I appreciate Ken and appreciate working with him, I would not be in favor of making such a move. It would set a precedent around the state that I don't think we're prepared to or even want to take on.
Okay. Ken, response?
Yeah, in terms of the clearly identifiable boundary, I would disagree with Boyd on that one. It's a paved road. You know, as you're driving down the paved road, it would make it so that the CWMU is on the right side of the road, it's CWMU, and on the left side of it, it's not. And so I think it does clarify that. It's a very minimal acreage. You know, they're essentially go together and touch everything but, you know, I mean, it's just a few yards across the way. And again, there's lots of CWMUs that are out there. I was amazed. There's 116 of them that we're doing, and I'm the one that I'm coming and whining about some different thing. Boyd does have a point. There's going to be lots of CWMUs or the potential to have new and good CWMUs that don't fit the exact mold. Obviously, we can go to a neighbor and get some additional acreage, and we can patch these things together. It just seemed like the right thing to us to be able to give two public tags out there instead of one, have a clearly identifiable boundary. The landowner wants that in terms of, you know, then it's clear to him, and in terms of all of our ground is under a CWMU. Are we trying to be inclusive with CWMUs or exclusive? Do we want more of them or not? And I suppose that's what the issue is.
And I appreciate you coming to the central region tonight, because it is in the central region, but I'd also invite you to go to the Wildlife Board meeting as well and make your case to the board itself.
Certainly. And thanks for your consideration. It's a small issue, but appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ken. I have no other comment cards on the proposal from the division. Discussion or recommendation or a motion for recommendation? Sarah.
Tom, you're the wildlife biologist in the Tooele area, right? Can you tell me what kind of an impact this would make? Would it be hard to manage? Would it be indifferent? I mean, it's Full Valley. I see a benefit to something like that.
Well, essentially, there was that huge wildfire that went through there, 44,000 acres. And yeah, there were a few deer in there prior to that, but I haven't seen a lot of deer in that North Skull Valley CWMU area. So, and if they are in there, it's like you said, it's winter range, and they come in fairly late. Just didn't see that there was very much in the way of opportunity. The bridge, though, would allow, if granted, would allow them to, I guess, use it in case there was some opportunity at all. But if it doesn't meet the rule for including public land, then we have to deny it. At least I had to deny it. So it's just there's just not a lot of deer there now. So it's
Chris.
Boyd, I think you've basically answered the question, but I just want to clarify. There's no precedent for this, correct?
No, not for in order to add public land to make one CWMU, no.
Okay. I would think that the division would be interested in thinking of all the implications of that before making a precedent in this case.
Michael.
Yeah, I guess from the Bureau BLM perspective, I agree with Boyd on this. I really want to not touch that topic of including public land in CWMUs and try to avoid that when necessary. It's just not a good situation.
Are we ready for a motion? Jay?
I had a question. There's other CWMUs that have public land included in them, I think.
Yes, there are. Yes, there are. And they're like they meet the three criteria though. And one of the three. They have to meet at least one of the three. I guess my issue would be, and I'm not familiar, and I would turn it over to the region, but I believe what we're talking about is a piece of public land that splits the two. And so it's not needed to make a good boundary between the two. I mean it would if what we're trying to do is make one CWMU, but that's not necessary. That's not what's necessary in this CWMU.
Is there any deer or any hunting on that piece of ground?
Well, I think Tom was just here and said that the deer is very, very few, if any, and the fire had gone through and the habitat isn't there for a good deer, for a good quality deer hunt or deer herd.
On the public land.
Yep.
George?
Was there a reason that it was not one CWMU before, and was it because the public land divided it?
Yes.
Chris?
If it's all right, Fred, I'll make a motion to accept the division's recommendation on item number 6 here, CWMU management plans and permit numbers for 2012.
A motion by Chris. Is there a second to that motion? A second by Tim. Further discussion?
I got one more.
When is it that we talk about the percentages that go to the CWMUs as far as public and public hunters and private hunters?
What's that? Yeah. It'll. We have a 5-year review of, and we'll be discussing that at that point. And it'll be. It needs to be done in 2013.
So is that retroactive? If we approve this tonight and say that got changed instead of 90-10 to a 70-30, would that be retroactive to these units?
Public-private split.
Those splits will take place, as I said. I guess it retroactive. It'll go from that point forward. If it was to change, it'll go from that point forward.
So if we 90% is presented, and then it changed to 70% in 2 years, these would change to 70%.
That's correct.
That's my question.
They all would change.
Okay.
And
what is it that changes them? Is it recommendation, or is it the application by the CWMUs, or
let me see if I can answer that for him.
Okay.
George, the CWMU rules and regulations go for 5 years. And so the percentage, whether it's 90-10 or 80-20 or whatever, are basically not dealt with until the new five-year rule is taken under consideration. So
But I am a little confused in that there were like 116 that needed to reapply this year. But when they apply is not when this is set, then.
That's right. The individuals, when they reapply, they have some options that they can take with some of their animals in terms of
cows. And
for example, when they're dealing with cows, they can opt for a different kind of a split. But the overall split numbers are only dealt with when the plan is reconsidered.
Okay, and now this is a completely different question. If it's private and it's public, what opportunities do the public have on a particular CWMU?
If it's taken in public land?
If it's 10% public, then is that 10%? What opportunity do
then,
they have?
Then that addition, that adds to the opportunity for public permits there. They'll come right off the top. That percentage that's public.
Okay, let me ask the question differently. What regulations can the operator of the CWMU put on those public tag holders?
Well, they have to be able to hunt the entire CWMU. And they have
to. The public does.
Yeah. Well, everybody. Anybody who has a permit. If you buy a permit from that guy or you have a public permit, the rules and regulations apply to them as much as anybody, the public.
And they would be able to hunt during the entire period then?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things we might consider, George, is that. At our February meeting, we might want to get into further detail so that you guys get educated a little bit more on how CWMUs work, because it is important, and as you can see, there's lots and lots of CWMUs and lots of acres, so I don't want to cut you off, but I think it would be a good topic to have when we have an opportunity to do that and have Boyd come back and make a presentation on just how CWMUs work.
How about if I call for the question?
Thank you. All those in favor of the motion to accept the CWMU management plan and permit numbers as proposed by the division, say aye. Opposed? And that passes unanimously. And we'll go to our final action topic, Boyd. Landowner permit numbers.
All righty. This is fairly quick, so watch closely. I was voted the fastest presentation last night on landowner associations. So this is for the 2012 landowner association voucher recommendations. We received 15 applications. The DWOR is recommending approval of all 15, so there's no split recommendations. There are 15 landowner associations that involve 125 deer vouchers, 4 management buck vouchers, 93 elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers. Thank you.
Questions from the rack? Questions from the audience? A motion from the rack?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Jay, seconded by Larry. Further discussion? Those in favor? Opposed? Thank you for your presentations, Boyd.
Thank you. And let me just say in closing, I would really appreciate being able to come down and maybe spend some time with you guys in probably over at the office there in Springville on a day or a night. and talk to you about CWMUs. I get a feeling that, sometimes we're not on the same page. And every year when I come and talk to you, it's always at this end right here, and I would love to be able to come down and talk to you and work things out.
Thank you, Blake.
Thank you.
And again, thank you, everybody, for turning out tonight. We appreciate it very much, and that ends our action items. RAC members, if you just stay over for a few minutes, I'd like to talk to you about a possible February meeting. Basically, this is where we're at. We do have a meeting next month in December. Do you have the date in front of you? December date? Thank you. The 13th? Okay, so our next RAC meeting is on the 13th, and that'll be the final meeting of the year. The schedules for next year have been out and approved by the board, and right now, officially, after our December meeting, we don't meet again until April. So we don't have a meeting in January, February, or March. It occurred to a couple of us that we like each other and we like to see you, but more important, usually when we come to these RAC meetings, our agenda is really, really full, and we really don't get a chance to talk about anything other than what's on the agenda or get to know each other a little bit better. So we thought about a proposal that we would get together for a February meeting, and it would be an open meeting. Anybody could attend because under the